glad to be here with each one of you, and I hope that you've enjoyed the song service as much as I have. Boy, it's still sounding good where I was sitting. There was a lot of good alto behind me, and I do love to hear it. Appreciate the prayer, Brother Dana. Prayed a good prayer. He must have known a little bit about what I was going to talk about, because he talked about our bad habits. Got a lesson for you tonight about something that I hope will help you. Now, I don't give a lesson on something that I'm not real familiar with, and I'm real familiar with this one. A few years that I've spent in the Lord's service, I try to learn the lessons He tries to teach me, and this has been one of the hardest ones. And so I want to present this to you for what it's worth. Now, you good Bible students with some age on you are going to have gone through this, and you're going to look at what I'm going to present to you and smile. And those of you that have not got quite that much maturity, I'm hoping will understand as I try to explain what I think some of these scriptures mean. We're going to talk about persistent habits, partial commitments, and living sacrifices. Before we get into these three topics, we're going to talk about a short section concerning our Christian growth, because I want you to understand that I believe that our Christian life is a life of growth. It's a life of maturity. It's a life of understanding. Verses that we've read and been preached to and heard from the pulpit for years, finally, one day, we're going to go through an experience in life that's going to make it real. And we're going to realize that's what that verse meant. I finally see what that verse meant. We should desire the written knowledge to grow. And I'm using these scriptures to show you that we're on a pattern of growth. So things I describe to you seem like it's something strange, or you don't know what I'm trying to say. Our life, our spiritual life, is a life of growth. 1 Peter 2 and 2, as newborn babes, desire the sincere milk of the Word, that you may grow thereby. And please focus on the word desire. Desire the sincere milk of the Word. We've got to want it to grow thereby. This is not a situation where we preach people down the aisle, we baptize them, and then that's it. That's it. They got it. They're saved from their last sins. They're regenerated. They're perfect from then on the rest of their life. No problems. We should desire spoken knowledge to grow. Listening to others and preaching, 1 Corinthians 3, 1 and 2, and I, brethren, could not speak unto you as unto spiritual, but as unto carnal, even as unto babes in Christ. I have fed you with milk and not with meat, for hitherto you were not able to bear it, neither yet now are you able. But we're speaking of the spoken word now. We should desire spoken knowledge to grow. And finally, we should desire the experience we need to grow as a Christian. Hebrews 5, verses 13 and 14. For everyone that uses milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongs to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. The senses exercised, experience. We talked about how important that was the other night and asked the question, could we have the hope of Romans 5 without the tribulations that were a part of it? So, let's talk about our habits. Persistent habits. Remember the title, Persistent Habits and Partial Commitments and Living Sacrifices. Well, the first two are opposed against the third. Persistent habits and partial commitments are opposed to living sacrifices. So we're going to talk about these first two a little bit. Just a few ideas on each one. Persistent habits. What's another way to describe persistent habits? I've had a lesson in the past about FFS, favorite familiar feelings. There's another term called favorite miserable feelings, FMS. Now, favorite miserable feelings are a learned shelter in the time of emotional storm. Now, remember, we're speaking of persistent habits. When we get in an emotional situation, we're uncomfortable, we seek shelter in something that has given us comfort before. It's a learned response. Sometimes it's learned from parents. Most often it's learned from parents. But it could be learned from other things as we grow up. What are some of these things? Anger. When someone falls back into anger, they're in a situation that they feel uncomfortable, and so they get mad. They're angry. Sometimes it's withdrawal. We will run and hide, and that's our escape from the immediate situation. Sometimes it's activities. We get lost in doing something. I feel bad, I feel uncomfortable, so let's go shopping. Or let's do this, or let's do that. Let's just go. Activity, that's a favorite miserable feeling. You say, wait a minute now, when I go shopping, I'm not miserable. Well, are you facing what made you uncomfortable in the first place? Are you solving any problems? Are you coming to a solution, a conclusion to what caused you to be uncomfortable? No. You just slipped off into an escape. Sometimes it's control. People want to control other people. They want to control the situation. They want to control the conversation. Sometimes it's into selfishness. I feel uncomfortable, so I'm just going to take care of number one. Regardless of who else needs me or who else's feelings are at stake, my favorite familiar feeling is to take care of number one. And so we practice selfishness. Sometimes it's association. Our association with groups of people or our peers, so to speak. Someone on a Saturday night sitting around kind of bored, what do they say? Sometimes young people, older people have usually got too many responsibilities to do this kind of thing, but young people say, I want to go hang out with my buds. I want to go hang out with my friends. I want to go, when I was growing up, they want to go drive around Dairy Queen. Now they go to all kinds of different places, but they want to go somewhere. They want to be with their association, see? That is their, and again, you say, well, they're not miserable, they're out with their friends. Well, it's good to have friends, but sometimes we go just because we're bored with something else. The favorite miserable feeling of plenty is in the Bible. Luke, the 12th chapter, verses 17 through 21. I've shortened some of this to make it fit on the screen, but I think we'll get the point here. Jesus gave this parable concerning those who were covetous. He said, The man who was a very good farmer and had a bountiful harvest said this, what shall I do because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Now here's where he got in trouble. This was his favorite miserable feeling. Take your ease, soul. Don't worry about anything. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry. And then God said to him, you fool, this night your soul will be required. So is he that lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. The FMF, favorite miserable feeling of plenty. And what about you and I? We're in danger of this because how many of you can remember the last time you worried about where your next meal was coming from? How many of you were afraid to take the clothes off you had on because you didn't know where there was going to be any other clothes for you to put on? Or failed to plan on going somewhere at a certain time because you absolutely had no way to get there. No gas money, no car. No way to get somewhere. Can we even imagine that? We want to go where we want to go. We want to buy what we want to buy. We want to eat what we want to eat. Anytime, anywhere. So we are, and we have the potential to fall into the FMF of plenty, like the rich man did. What about the FMF of associates? Matthew 14, verses 6 through 9. But when Herod's birthday was kept, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod. He promised with an oath to give her whatsoever she would ask. But she was before being instructed of her mother, said, give me here John the Baptist's head in the charger. Okay, the king was sorry. Now, before you read the rest of it, get this situation now. What could control a king? A king has the power. He's got the upper hand. What could control the king? His friends. His friends could control him. Because that was his favorite miserable feeling, to be in a crowd and do what his friends wanted. The king was sorry. Nevertheless, for the oath's sake and them which sat with him at meat, he commanded it to be given her. Do you get it? Them which sat with him at meat. Don't we all know stories? Think back to our youth. Don't we all know stories of some friends that got into trouble because they followed some of our other friends down the wrong road? They got into wreck because they were goaded into driving too fast, or they drank too much, or they did this, or they did that. Why would they do it? Why would they do it? You couldn't have taken a gun and put at them and made them drive too fast. But they did it because they didn't want to get out of the group. They didn't want to fall out of the standing with the group. They had a reputation to do whatever the group was doing. Listen, one of the best feelings that you'll ever have is complete independence from that. I don't mean you've got to be a hard case and don't care about anything or anybody. But one of the best feelings you'll ever get is the day you get your freedom from that favorite miserable feeling. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Listen, there's things that will entrap people besides the bars on a jail cell. The FMS Association. Now, this might be a little strange to you, but think of this. In 1 Corinthians 3, verses 3 and 4, Paul said, "For you are yet carnal. For where is there is among you envying and strife and divisions? Are you not carnal and walk as men? For while one says, 'I am of Paul,' and another, 'I am of Apollos,' are you not carnal?" See, the previous one we talked about was associates. This one is association. Who do we want to be associated with? Now, it's easy to be associated with a group of people. I've spoke with people in other churches of Christ that had different sets of speakers, and they'd say, "Well, I sure do like Brother So and So. You know Brother So and So?" And I'd say, "No, I've never heard of him." "You don't know Brother So and So?" And I could tell that they held Brother So and So in high regard. They couldn't believe that I didn't know him. I just wondered how much confidence they put in him. And some people put a lot of confidence in their speakers and their church leaders. Well, you need to have confidence, but we don't need to go so far that we would be guilty of this favorite familiar feeling. Sometimes people put their association in ties to a ball team. And we think that Auburn and Alabama is the biggest rivalry, but other people in other parts of the country think they've got the biggest rivalry in other states, in other places. What is it about people that want this association with certain things? But we do. Now, let's change over to the second part. Partial commitments. Partial commitments bring only partial salvation. Some people are partially committed in small things. Now, this is going to be a two-parter right here. We're going to read part of this in this section of the lesson. We'll pick up the other part in the next section. This is in Luke 19, chapter verses 20 and 26. A master went to a far-off land, and he left 10 servants with a pound apiece. A pound being a certain sum of money, not a great sum of money, but enough that they could spend it, invest it, work with it. So he left these servants with 1 pound apiece. He came back, and he asked these servants what they had done. I believe it was the third one came to him, and he came to him with this answer. Another came saying, "Lord, behold, here is your pound which I have kept laid up in a napkin, for I feared you." I feared you because you were an austere man. You take up that you lay not down and reap that you did not sow. He said unto him, out of your own mouth will I judge you, you wicked servant. You knew that I was an austere man. And he repeated what the servant just said. Then he said, take from him the pound and give it to him that has 10 pounds. For I say unto you that unto everyone which has shall be given, and from him that has not, even that he has shall be taken away from him. Now I want to bring this to you because this to me is an example of partial commitment. This was the man's servant. The man knew his master well. The man feared his master. But in my mind, there's only a partial commitment of this servant to his master's goodwill. He feared him to the point that he did not use the talents that he had. Maybe he thought that was good enough to just simply not waste what he had. I won't waste it. I won't gain anything with it, but I won't waste it, so I'll give it back to him. Was his master pleased with him? No. Look at the end. He says, you knew. You knew what I needed. You knew what I wanted. But you still didn't use what I gave you to full potential. You were only partially committed. And what happened to him? Take what he's got away from him and give it to the man that already has more. He said, give it to the one that had the 10 pounds, which is the one we're going to study in just a few minutes. Give it to the one that has 10. So, what kind of man would we be if the Lord came back right now and said, where's your pound? What have you done with the knowledge I gave you to learn to read? What have you done with the knowledge I gave you to learn to speak? What have I done with the emotions that I gave you and put in you to reach other people? What have you done with it? Could we say that we are 100% committed and not be partially committed like this man? Some are partially committed to the true gospel. Galatians, Paul said this, Galatians 1, verse 6 and 7, I marvel that you are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. Removed to another gospel, they heard something else. Maybe it sounded like what they want to hear. How many of us know someone very closely that has drifted away into not supposedly a lack of religion, but another type of religion, another belief? Perhaps it was because of a doctrine that another organization would defend and practice and accept them in, or who knows what it was. Are we partially committed to the true gospel? Well, let me just ask you this, and this is a question you've got to settle in your mind first. Do you have the true gospel? Is this the true gospel that we've got tonight? The way that we worship, as simply as we worship, as conservatively as we worship, do you believe that this is what God intended us to do? I certainly hope you do. And I hope you're committed to it. I hope that we're not here out of a partial commitment because our friends are here, our family's here, we've been here all this time. My great-grandparents were here, so I'm going to be here too. Some are partially committed to the faith. In James 1, verses 5 through 8, James said, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. It shall be given him. I want you to notice those four words. It's highlighted. It shall be given. I don't see a maybe in that. I don't see a doubt. I don't see a question mark. If any of you lack wisdom, this is a powerful verse. If you wish that you could know more and use the Scriptures better and understand and feel what's in the Scriptures to get your point across, ask. It shall be given if you believe. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavers is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. When you ask and pray, do you believe that you're going to get something? Are we committed? Are we partially committed? Okay. Now on to the last part. Only a living sacrifice will be worthy of Jesus' blood. And you know what those question marks are for? Oh, that's a dangerous statement right there. That's a dangerous statement. Because how can anybody be worthy of the blood of Jesus Christ? How can any one of us, no matter what we do, how can we say that we're worthy of the blood of Jesus Christ? And yet, Jesus Himself gave us parables of the 10-talent man and the 5-talent man and the one that we're working on right now, the people that were all given 1 pound. And what He expects us to do is everything we can with what He gave us. Now, can we say and put Jesus' blood on one side of a set of scales and then put our life on the other side and say that we can ever be worthy enough to balance that out so that we can ever be worthy enough to be equal with the blood of Christ? No, not worthy in that respect, but worthy in the respect that we gave Him all we could. A living sacrifice is what He's asking of us. And that's what He showed us with His life. A living sacrifice will be committed to even small things. Now we're going to pick up the first part of that parable that we read just a minute ago. When He was returned, Luke 19:15-19, when He was returned, this is the Master, He commanded these servants to be called unto Him that He might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Lord, your pound has gained 10 pounds. He said unto him, because you have been faithful in a very little, you've been faithful with that 1 pound, have you authority over 10 cities? And the second came, saying, Lord, your pound has gained 5 pounds. And he said likewise to him, be you also over 5 cities. Now the lesson is do the best you can with what you've got, and you won't be counted unworthy. Just because someone else is in a better situation, had more talent, or whatever. Some people are just better at certain things than others. The Bible tells us that. All that's ever been asked of us is to do the very, very best we can with what we've got. Our time, our talent, our resources. But notice this. You have been faithful in a very little. You know, it may be some big thing, and you can fill in the blank as to what you think a big thing is. It may be some big thing that keeps us out of heaven if we don't make it. It may be some big thing. But my fear is, it's not going to be a big thing that keeps us out of heaven. It's going to be little things. It's going to be little things that we either did or we failed to do. It's going to be how we handled the little things. And that's exactly what this parable is about. The little things. We've got to be committed in even the smallest of things. The smallest of attitude changes. A living sacrifice will crucify the flesh. Here's a well-known verse. I believe I've used it 2 or 3 times this weekend. But I want you to stay with me until we get down toward the end. Galatians 5:22-24. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, meekness, faith, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lust. Crucified the flesh. Crucified the flesh. Can you understand that? What that means? That means we practice self-discipline. We practice self-denial. How many things can you think of that if you had the time right now, you could be doing with your life? I hear people talk about that I work with as we're, a lot of us came on about the same time in our career some 35 years ago. They're looking at retirement. And so I around people that are talking about things that they want to do. Oh, I can't wait till I retire. I've had things I wanted to do. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do that. I just can't wait for it all to happen. Okay? If you could somehow cram 48 hours into 24 so that this next year you could live 2 years worth of living into 1 year, what would you do with that time? How many of you would say, I'd study twice as much because I'd have time to study. I'd write. I'd visit more churches because I'd have time. I wouldn't have to get up early the next morning. I'd have time to go and support these revivals. I'd go and do this work for the Lord. I'd go and do that work for the Lord. You know, that's what we ought to say if we crucify the flesh. But how many of us would say, man, that'd give me time to get this boat I've been wanting. That'd give me time to learn how to do this trade or this profession. I could pick up another degree. I could get better qualified. I'd have more time to do this or do that if I could cram 2 years' worth of time into my next year. I'd have it made. Crucified the flesh. They that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. The living sacrifice will have a peculiar attitude. Paul needed an attitude adjustment. He was going along doing the Lord's work, going to different places, spreading the gospel, but his attitude was lacking in one particular thing. Now this is where I'm trying to get the point across to you, that our Christian life is a life of growth. And if we're going to be a fit servant, the Lord's going to test us, He's going to try us, He's going to push us and prod us. And just when we think we've got things figured out, He's going to throw us a monkey wrench. And it's going to change a lot of things that we thought we knew about religion. But it's going to make us stronger. See, Paul thought he was doing good, but the Lord wanted to send him a little message. And that little message is what Paul called a thorn in the flesh. We don't know exactly what it was. We don't need to know. That's immaterial. If it was important, we would have been told what it was. So there's no use in speculating. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7 through 10. Lest I should be exalted above measure, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh. Now, Paul's getting real personal here. Real personal. Don't you love a man that gets real personal? He writes all these letters to all these churches and talks about all this high stuff that he needs to talk about. But right here, he gets personal. There was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. He said unto me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Okay, talk about a reversal in attitude. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. Just imagine, if I have my hand right here, and you're up here beating on my hand with a hammer, and I get to the point I can't stop you, and I'm praying to the Lord, Lord, help me, Lord. And I pray to the Lord three times, make you quit hitting my hand with a hammer. And I get this message, my grace is sufficient for you. And all of a sudden, instead of I quit praying, and I start saying, hit me harder. Hit me harder. I can take it. This is my message from the Lord. Hit me harder. That's what Paul's saying. What a change in attitude. You know what this did? This made him see his whole life different. Instead of seeing his life with these problems and this thorn in the flesh, he says, look, this is what makes me strong. This is what makes me strong. Now I can show people that God is in me, that Jesus is in me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, reproaches, necessities. You get excited about this passage? Can you feel what a change in attitude will do to anybody's life when you become a living sacrifice? So you ask the question, what have I got to give? What have I got to give? What do you mean a living sacrifice that would make me a stronger person? Well, I don't know what you've got to give, but it might go along this line. If you have constant worry, give it up to the Lord. If you have high anxiety, give it up to the Lord. If you think life is passing you by, now you old people will grin at this, and you young people won't understand yet, but when you get my age, you sort of want to go through the middle-aged crazes. I thought it was a joke. Not a joke. Ask Brad and Chad. But if you think life is passing you by, get it up to the Lord. If your champion didn't win, I'll be honest with you, just so you know where this is coming from. You think I'm making this up. I didn't care a thing about NASCAR for years. Old man driving around in a circle. A few years ago, some friends of mine at work, they really started following. Well, I was talking to them. I got to listen to it. I got involved in it. I started pulling for a particular driver. I'm a little competitive, too competitive. That's one thing I need to give up to the Lord. But on Sunday afternoon, we'd be riding home and riding around. I'd be listening to the race. And it might be in California. But when my guy got run into the wall, it made me feel bad. Now, why in the world would I get to feeling bad when my guy that doesn't even know me, I've got no money riding on it, I really don't even know what he looks like. I just know his name and number on the car. But why would I be upset because he got run in the wall in California in a race? Because I needed a champion. Now, how many of us need a champion? How many of us, our emotions ride up and down on whether our champion is on top or on the bottom? Maybe this is one thing that we need to give up. Give it to the Lord and say, no more for me. It's coming between me and being a living sacrifice, so my emotions will not play anymore. Think about this. You know, if we're a Christian, we've got a champion, and he has already won. Our champion has already won, and he is on the right hand of God all the time. We don't need another one on this earth. What have I got to give if your spouse isn't making you happy? If you've got that feeling, give it up. Give it up to the Lord. It's not up to your spouse to make you happy, and I hope and pray to the Lord that your spouse can't make you happy if you depend on your spouse for the happiness of your soul. Because as long as you think your spouse will make you happy, you're never going to give yourself to the Lord as He deserves. You'll never be worthy, and I want you to be worthy of the blood of Christ. If your neighbor has it better than you think. If you've ever thought that and sort of talked about your neighbor, and every time you see your neighbor because you think your neighbor drives a better car, got more land, got a better looking house, got a better looking wife, better looking husband, so on and so forth. If you ever even think that, give it up to the Lord. Let that be the sacrifice. And never let those thoughts cross your mind again. If you ever feel bored, I don't know when I've ever felt bored. I've heard other people say that they felt bored. But I grew up practically as an only child. Nancy's about 14 years younger than I am. That's why she looks like she's only 20. But I grew up essentially an only child. In entertainment, you had to entertain yourself. There's no use in feeling bad. There's nobody else going to listen to you. And I don't know that as I got to be an adult, I ever considered boredom. Just never considered. I don't have enough time to do. If I had more time, I'd have more time to read. I'd have more time to work on lessons. If you feel bored, give that boredom to the Lord as sacrifice and say, Lord, let me get the resources while I study. If I ever have a minute, I'll study your word. You won't have boredom anymore. If you ever ask, why me? Give that up to the Lord. Say, Lord, I don't know why, and I don't care, but this is this feeling that I've got. You take it. Show me where you want me to go. I'm your living sacrifice. So we're going to close by trying to answer this question. But why? Why is this even necessary? I can't tell you why, I'll be honest. All I can do is say that this is the same pattern that Jesus Himself followed. In Ephesians 5:25-27, Paul wrote this. He said, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. Man, Christ gave Himself that the church might be pure. Now, I want you to get this principle, because we're fixing to look at it two more times. The principle is that when we give something, we're going to get something in return. The people in the Old Testament gave the best of their flocks, the best of their fruits, the best of their gardens. They gave the best. In return, they got a guarantee that their flocks would not fail, their harvest would not fail, they would not be overrun by their enemies, and disease wouldn't wipe them out. Plagues wouldn't kill them. That's what they got in return. You see, every time God has asked people to give Him something, He has given them more in return. Jesus gave Himself that He might have a way to cleanse and purify the church, that He might present it to Himself as a spotless, chaste, beautiful bride. Paul himself followed this, and this goes back to the song that we sang before the lesson, 2 Timothy 1:12, For which cause I also suffer these things, meaning the cause of Christ. Nevertheless, I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that He is able to keep that which I have committed unto Him against that day. Which I have committed unto Him. Well, I just can't give up my anger, because that's what I use to control people around me. And I can control the situation if I can get angry first. Are you afraid to commit that to the Lord? Are you afraid to commit your lust to the Lord? Your high anxiety, your worry, your social standing? The belief you have that you think you fit in good with your peers, and if it's a bad peer group, are you afraid to commit that and give that to God and say, I don't need that anymore. You strengthen me. Your will be done, not mine. Your control, not mine. I'll let you handle the situation, not me. Can we say this along with Paul? And finally, now here's the one that got me. I needed this verse, and I cannot tell you why, and I don't want to stand up here and stand like a witness, but it seems like when I have needed something, it's almost like the book opened up and the verse hit me between the eyes that I needed. And I needed this one. Mark 8:34-36. When He called the people unto Him with His disciples also, He said unto them, whosoever will come after Me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow Me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for My sake and the gospel, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Just the simplest verse. I bet you, if you counted, you've heard that 1,000 times and read it. But do you get it? Do you really get it? I didn't get it till a short while back. You sometimes have got to give up something. A part of what you thought was a part of your persona, your personality, your aura, your whatever, your karma, whatever the term is, that you think is you, is what you're known by. You may have to just give it up and say, I am just Your servant, Lord. That's all I am. I can't control anything. I'm not smart enough to know any answers. Help me, Lord. Then you'll be trying to understand what this verse is trying to tell us. Okay, persistent habits, partial commitments, and living sacrifices. Where are we? Are we up in here? Now again, remember we began by talking about our Christian life as a life of growth. Please, don't get me wrong in anything that I'm trying to say. If you feel like, and be honest with yourself, if you feel like you're still up in here, persistent habits and partial commitments, there's just things that you just can't quite shake. Don't think that I'm trying to run you off. I'm not. Christian life is a life of growth. We grow through these things. I believe it is impossible for us to even consider that a person could come down the aisle, shake the preacher's hand, be baptized in water, grave of baptism, and come up and be completely regenerated into an absolutely perfect, mature spiritual being with no problems, no ties to his former life whatsoever. I just do not think that is possible. So what that does tell me is that we are in stages of growth. If you are in here, I'm just trying tonight to show you that there is a way right here that we need to be going toward. We need to be fastly going toward our lives being living sacrifices. You'll be happier. Take my word for it. If you haven't experienced it yet, and you old heads, you old gray heads, I'm one of you. You know what I'm talking about. You know I'm telling you the truth. Give things up that's bothering you, that's not causing you anxiety. Give them up. Give them to the Lord. You will be happier for it. You will be better off for it. You'll be a better example to you. You'll come a whole lot nearer saving your kids and grandkids if you will be this kind of a person. The thing you want, you get by asking Jesus to strengthen you. Isn't that what he said? Didn't he say something like, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. We can help tonight, either through obedience to the gospel or through the prayers of the church for strengthening or restoration. If we can help in any way, please let us while we stand and sing.
Six hundred. David is standing.